Traditional Ukrainian folk song, Susidko, Neighbor Girl, and that was performed by Dunai from Toronto, Ontario, from their brand new CD just being launched in Toronto. Dobrý večer I vitaju vás всіх, шановні радіослухачі, та вітаю вас всіх на радіопередачу «Наш голос» Радіо Українського коріння, котра подається вам щосуботи о 6-й годині на багатомовній радіостанції АМ 1320 у місті Ванкувері. При мікрофоні Павліна, дякую, що ви були слухачами сьогодні ввечері та рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Ми маємо дуже цікаві новини на сьогоднішній програмі. Hello there and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. I'm your host, Pavlina. Thank you so much for joining me. We've got a great program lined up for you. Ukrainian Jewish heritage with a very interesting story about a brand new dictionary coming out. Yiddish Ukrainian. As well, we've got news from Ukraine courtesy Ukraine Today, the English language news service from Ukraine. An interview with James Bazan, who is the Member of Parliament for Interlake Selkirk in Manitoba, also the Parliamentary Secretary for the Minister of Defense. And he has some interesting insights on the situation in Ukraine, Canadian military aid, and in particular in light of the recent budget that was just announced last week. As well, we have Victor's vignettes, and he has a little trip down memory lane, not a very happy one. He is recalling being in Kyiv at the end of April 1986. So some interesting perspectives of somebody who was actually there at that time. As well, we've got our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and great Ukrainian music. And as you can tell by my voice, I've come down with another cold. And so I'm not going to be chit-chatting a lot. We're going to be playing a lot of music that is probably pretty familiar to you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy.
To the foresight and generosity of its donors, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been investing in the future of the Ukrainian-Canadian community for over 50 years. Since 1963, the Taras Shevchenko Foundation has been funding initiatives that strengthen our Ukrainian-Canadian identity and enhance our Ukrainian-Canadian cultural heritage. These include fine and performing arts and arts groups, museums, cultural centers, education, as well as authors, journalists, and the Ukrainian-Canadian media, including this program. The foundation strives to become the premier not-for-profit foundation in a Canada which acknowledges the Ukrainian-Canadian community as a fundamental component of Canadian society. Nash Holos listeners are encouraged to support this vision through continued donations into the future. To apply for grants, make a donation, or for more information, visit ShevchenkoFoundation.com.
Miss the 20th Annual BC Ukrainian Cultural Festival, Saturday, May 2nd at the Clark Foundation Theatre, 33700 Prentice Avenue in Mission, BC. Non-stop dance competitions from 8:30 a.m. till 6:30 p.m. Kids activities, arts and crafts displays and demonstrations, and of course, great Ukrainian food. Tickets are $8 for adults, $5 for students, and $1 for kids 5 and under. That's the 20th Annual BC Ukrainian Cultural Festival, Saturday, May 2nd at the Clark Foundation Theatre in Mission.
For the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you can give a destitute family in Ukraine food, hope, and a better life. Please open your heart and share your good fortune. Sponsor a Ukrainian child today. Details at www.heart.ca. That's H-A-R-T.ca.
Hi, I'm Vincent Reese from Edmonton's Cobblestone Freeway Cultural Tours with exciting news. Our 2015 tours are up and ready to go. Join us for a unique cultural tour. We have trips to Eastern Europe, including Western Ukraine, Hungary, and Croatia. Plus, we're going to Costa Rica, Brazil, and Argentina. So visit our website for photos and details. Cobblestone Freeway, we're in Edmonton and ready to go. So book today. Visit cobblestonefreeway.ca.
Чорні очка, як тебе. Чорні очка, як терен, як терен, як терен. Колимося поберем, поберем. Чорні очка, як терен, як терен, як терен. Колимося поберем, поберем.
Поберемся, поберемся в неділю. Поберемся, поберемся в неділю. Поберемся в неділю, в неділю, в неділю. Маю на тя надію, надію. Поберемся в неділю, в неділю, в неділю.
Дещ ти мене, дещ ти мене поведеш, дещ ти мене поведеш, дещ ти мене поведеш, 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 як ти хати не маєш, не маєш, дещ ти мене поведеш, 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 як ти хати не маєш, не маєш.
Поведуча, поведуча в чужую, поведуча, поведуча в чужую. Поведуться в чужую, 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 поки свою збудую, збудую.
Поведуться в чужую, 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 поки свою збудую, збудую.
Ukrainian Jewish Heritage in cooperation with the Jewish Heritage Museum in Lviv, Ukraine. This special Nash Holos feature is brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative based in Toronto, Ontario.
A grandfather taught his grandson the Jewish alphabet and read him poems in Yiddish. Shortly before his death, he tied all the Jewish books into a pile and threw them onto the very top shelf of a cabinet. He believed that nobody would ever need them. But the grandson took down this pile and started to read the books. This is a story of a language lost and regained, and this is also a story of one man's determination to honor his heritage with an extraordinary contribution to help revive a language of dreamers. My interest for Yiddish was born in my family, says Dr. Dmytro Tishchenko. My ancestors spoke this language. It was as natural as breathing. Tishchenko is the son of a Jewish mother and a Ukrainian father from Donbass. He is the creator of a massive new Yiddish-Ukrainian dictionary produced with the assistance of the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter. The 945-page tome is being acclaimed in Jerusalem, Kiev, and elsewhere. The Holocaust nearly destroyed Yiddish in Eastern Europe. Further damage was inflicted by Stalin's executions of Yiddish language writers and Soviet government policies. The language lost its vitality and languished on the margins of society. But the language refused to die. In 1988, Tishenkov heard a visiting Israeli band perform in Odessa. From the stage, he heard songs in Yiddish that only his grandparents would ever sing to him. He decided to devote his life to learning the language of his ancestors to perfection, and to ensure that others could access the spiritual treasures created in this language. Tishenko became a member of the activist Jewish community that emerged in the waning days of the Soviet Union. He created Yiddish courses and published the magazine Mama Loshen, or Mother Tongue. In 1991, he went to Israel to study Yiddish and to write a thesis on literature in Yiddish. Israel, however, had a complex relationship with Yiddish. Many Jews associated Yiddish with the humiliated, powerless, and deeply provincial community of the shtetls, poor ghetto towns scrabbling for survival. In contrast, Hebrew was viewed as the official state language of proud Israelis, a new breed of confident Jews who are not victims. Former Israeli Prime Minister Golda Meir, however, once pointed out that the shtetl was more than humiliation, anti-Semitism, and pogroms. It was also a system of values, community ethics, mutual aid, courage, and sacrifice. In compiling his dictionary, Tishenkov tapped into those values. During the last 1,000 years, the folklore of the nation, its wisdom and proverbs, were formed in Yiddish, he said. Hebrew did not have this development. I took the words that I found in Jewish literature. The soul of the nation is depicted in the vocabulary of people. The lives of people affect the language they speak, but the language also affects life. Both of my parents are very dear to me, and when I was working on the Ukrainian version of the dictionary, I did my work with trepidation, trying to reveal the potential of both the Ukrainian and Yiddish languages, said Tishenko. Now living in Frankfurt, Tishenko is developing an online version of his dictionary, which will make the process of learning Yiddish even more convenient and affordable. A new generation of young Jews in Ukraine, Israel, and elsewhere have enthusiastically embraced the study of Yiddish. They have rediscovered what the novelist Isaac Bishevis Singer always knew. In his famous Nobel Prize lecture, Singer proclaimed, "Yiddish has not yet said its last word. It contains treasures that have not been revealed to the eyes of the world. It was the tongue of martyrs and saints, of dreamers and Kabbalists, rich in humor and in memories that mankind may never forget. In a figurative way, Yiddish is the wise and humble language of us all, the idiom of frightened and hopeful humanity." You've been listening to Ukrainian Jewish Heritage on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter in Toronto, Canada. I'm Peter Baeger in San Francisco. Until next time, shalom.
Join us again for another episode of Ukrainian Jewish Heritage here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, brought to you by the Ukrainian Jewish Encounter Initiative. Now the latest news stories from Ukraine, courtesy Ukraine's first international English news channel, Ukraine Today.
Ukrainian MP and captive pilot Nadiya Savchenko can now face new charges, this time for crossing the border into Russia illegally. That's according to her lawyer, Mark Fagan. An expert has been appointed to figure out where exactly Savchenko was at the time of her arrest, reports the Echo of Moscow. Savchenko was abducted by militants in summer last year and funneled across the border into Russia, where she was handed over to authorities and charged with the involvement in the deaths of two Russian journalists in the conflict zone. She denies these charges. The fighter pilot was appointed to the country's delegation to the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe in January, a move which theoretically granted her immunity and should have led to her release.
Ukrainian forces came under fire overnight from Russian-backed militants at least 21 times. That's according to the Ukrainian Military Press Center. Government forces in eastern Ukraine were reportedly attacked with automatic grenade launchers, sniper rifle fire, and small arms in the Donetsk region, currently overrun by militants backed by Moscow. Ukraine and Russia signed a ceasefire agreement back in February that requires both sides to withdraw weapons 25 kilometers from the so-called line of contact in eastern Ukraine. But since the agreement was signed, there has been almost daily violations by militants. Ukraine says it does return fire when being fired upon.
It was an explosion during a pro-Ukrainian rally that shocked the country. Four people were killed and 10 injured on February the 22nd when a bomb exploded near a group of marchers. Now public events in Kharkiv during the May holiday celebrations have been banned because of the threat of a similar attack. Ukrainian Interior Minister Arsen Novakov said that Ukrainian regional authorities must study the security situation and must apply to the court to restrict activities if necessary. Ukraine will mark a series of holidays from May the 1st to May the 9th, culminating in the traditional May the 9th celebration on Victory Day, commemorating victory over Nazi Germany in 1945. Both Kharkiv and Odessa have been targeted by a series of explosions in recent months. Militant leaders who have seized control of parts of Ukraine's Donetsk and Luhansk regions in the east of Ukraine have also said they want to gain control of Kharkiv.
Ukrainian Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk has called protests by miners in Kyiv on Thursday a provocation to destabilize the country. Rinat Akhmetov, a billionaire businessman with connections to the Russian-backed militants in East Ukraine, has been accused of organizing the rallies of miners in order to pressurize the government into scrapping reform efforts in the energy sector. Journalists at the protest said they had seen miners being paid approximately 5 euros each for participating in the protests.
A militant from the so-called Luhansk People's Republic has been arrested in Dnipropetrovsk. Grenades and communications equipment were discovered after the 37-year-old man was arrested on Thursday. Ukraine's security service said the undercover spy collected intelligence and prepared acts of terrorism and sabotage. Officials say the man went on his own initiative to Luhansk almost a year ago. The arrest follows an increase in the number of terror attacks in cities including Kyiv, Kharkiv and Odessa, aimed at sowing fear into society.
Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko has reiterated his pledge to lead Ukraine towards integration with the European Union in a letter penned by the president and published in the Guardian newspaper on Friday. Poroshenko wrote that Ukraine's future is in Europe, we have chosen our path, and that Ukraine will push forward on its path to the European Union in spite of the many obstacles. The comments come as senior European Union officials are due in Kyiv on Monday in what will be their first formal Ukraine summit since the Russia-Ukraine war erupted. European Union Foreign Policy Chief Federica Mogherini, European Council President Donald Tusk, and European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker are due in Kyiv on Monday for progress talks with the Ukrainian government about the country's reforms agreed as part of the EU-Ukraine Association Pact. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko has expressed hope that the European Union will boost support for Ukraine and for its plans for European integration. Ukrainian officials will be attempting to further negotiations over a possible EU visa-free regime for Ukrainian citizens. But the deal is being undermined by Ukraine's lack of control over its eastern borders because of the war with Russia. However, Ukraine's proposal for an EU peacekeeping mission to East Ukraine is reportedly unlikely to be approved by Brussels. A massive engineering project to secure the Chernobyl nuclear power plant for decades to come is facing a €265 million funding shortfall. That's according to project officials who spoke to The Guardian this Friday. The European Bank for Reconstruction and Development has said it may be forced to make up the shortfall if donations do not materialize. This Sunday marks the 29th anniversary of the world's worst nuclear disaster. The 1986 catastrophe saw radioactive clouds spew across much of Eastern Europe. Most of the radiation was deposited on Belarusian land near the Ukrainian border.
A new memorial honoring Ukrainian soldiers who died fighting in the Donbas region has been unveiled at the National University of Defense of Ukraine in Kyiv. On the plaque, some 18 names are engraved in gold lettering. They are of those students who lost their lives in Donbas. Another 17 servicemen were handed the honorary title of Hero of Ukraine. Everyone must be reminded and warned about the consequences of selfishness, aggressiveness, and excessive ambitions of the current leaders, which seem to be our neighbor until recently, the Russian Federation. At the same time, some 228 students graduated after 3 years of learning. Soon, many will be operational or tactical commanders. Around half had already served on the front line until today. That includes paratrooper Alexander Sandul. After picking up his diploma, he recalled his experience of being deployed in the war zone for almost 3 months. We started from the city of Kramatorsk, then Bakhmutka, and all the other cities that you've seen on television. We learnt directly on the battlefield. Another soldier awarded was Vyacheslav Noschenko, known as the Master of Electronic Warfare. He is credited with jamming communications of the Russian-backed forces near the coastal city of Mariupol. Time flew very quickly there, constantly in movement, constantly another target. The officers here all delivered an oath to defend the country for the future generations to come.
Here at the Arsenal Book Festival, I'm in the middle of the Grand Hall where there's dozens of vendors still selling their books. Over here in this very small hall, I found an interesting charity project that encourages people not to buy books, but actually to give them away. Let's go in and find out a little bit more. Hello, my name's Stephen. Who are you?
Hi, I'm Paulina.
Can you tell me about what's going on here?
Sure. Our project called 100,000 Books for Libraries from Village. So, our aim is collect 100,000 books for these children.
Paulinka told me that 80% of public libraries in Ukraine are village libraries, and that for the past two decades, government funding to renew children's literature in villages has almost been wiped out. They're here collecting children's books to distribute to village libraries across the country. How many books have people brought in so far?
I don't know, but you can see that it's many books and it's first day.
While we were talking, we got interrupted by a delivery of books. Alisa told me why she and her daughters brought in some of their old books.
I think that we really need to give people a chance to read, and we thought that it would be great if our books could be useful for someone else.
After Alisa left, I took a seat to hear a little bit more about the 100,000 book charity.
I'm a volunteer. And all people who works for this project, it's for people, for children. Children in village, they can't read good books. Maybe they can find books in their libraries, but it's very old books. It's not good books. And here it's so many interesting books, and I hope they will read and they will develop and will be smart.
With a steady flow of books coming in, it appeared that there are plenty of people in Kyiv hoping children in villages will have something new to read. Reporting for Ukraine Today at the Arsenal Book Festival in Kyiv, I'm Stephen Breeze.
And with that, we've come to the end of this week's Ukraine News Roundup. For more breaking stories on Ukraine, follow Ukraine Today on YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and their live blog at uatoday.tv.
Ви слухайте українську радіопрограму «Наш голос» на багатомовній радіостанції AM 1320 CHMB у місті Ванкувері.
Wednesday, Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Defense, James Bazan, joined us on the live edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, which airs on CHLY 101.7 FM in Nanaimo. This is a rebroadcast of that live interview. James Bazan is the Member of Parliament for Selkirk Interlake and in 2013 was appointed by Prime Minister Stephen Harper as the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Defense. Minister Bazan is a Manitoba boy born in Inglis and now living with his wife and three daughters on a farm by Toulon. He has a close connection to the Ukrainian-Canadian community. He served as Vice President of the Canada-Ukraine Parliamentary Friendship Group. He received the Order of Prince Yaroslav the Wise from the President of Ukraine for his private member's bill recognizing the Soviet-imposed Holodomor, the forced famine of 1932-33, as an act of genocide against the Ukrainian people. Throughout his time in Parliament, Mr. Bazan has also acted and continues to act as an influential voice in the Canadian federal government on Ukrainian and Iranian human rights and democracy issues. He traveled with Prime Minister Harper to Ukraine in 2010 and has served as an election monitor in the last two Ukrainian elections, and he's made several trips more recently as well. For his outspoken opposition to the Russian invasion of Crimea in early 2014, Mr. Bazan was sanctioned by Russia, along with 12 other Canadians, and he has called this sanction a badge of honor, stating that it will not silence his criticisms of the illegal military invasion and occupation of Crimea by Russia, nor will it mute his strong support for the people of Ukraine and their transitional government. Mr. Bazan is a strong supporter of our armed forces and is proud of the brave men and women who have served and are currently serving in the Ukrainian forces. Yesterday, Canada's Finance Minister, Joe Oliver, unveiled a new budget, and so Mr. Bazan is joining us now by phone to discuss the latest developments in Canada's ongoing support of Ukraine and that country's sovereignty. Mr. Bazan, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Now, Canada's Ukrainians certainly appreciate the support of the Canadian military, and as do, of course, many Canadians of Ukrainian descent, especially those who have friends and relatives that are whose lives are at risk there in this ongoing conflict. Yesterday, the finance minister unveiled a new budget, and of course, wars cost money. Was this extra tasking, such as the most recent contribution of training troops last week, accounted for in the original DND budget for this fiscal year, or will DND be reallocating the funds to cover these and other new and unexpected military expenditures?
Well, the budget provides for the incremental costs of doing this training, which is going to be over $7 million to have 200 members of the Canadian Armed Forces in western Ukraine at the Yavoriv camp. And that camp was originally built by American and Canadian soldiers for training. And so it is a fairly new camp.
When, built. Sorry, when was that built?
About 6 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And so it was built by Canada, the United States, through NATO, and was built for this very purpose of training. And so it's, you know, Canada, the United States, and the United Kingdom have all signed the Joint Commission on Military Cooperation Reform with Ukraine. And so we are going to have about 150 members at the camp to do training specifically with individuals and units on tactical military training. Got to remember that Yanukovych allowed the Ukrainian military to deteriorate. Mm-hmm. He never did any recruitment or training. So there's under 6,000 professional soldiers at the time of the Crimean invasion. And so one of the reasons that we're seeing higher numbers of casualties from the front is that all these volunteers and recruitments are all, many of them have had no military training at all, never got to go through basic camp, basic training like we do with all of our new recruits. So this will give them a chance to get away from the front, get a chance to, you know, in battalions to come and rest, but also to learn and train. So they'll learn military doctrine. They're going to learn how to deal with, you know, improvised explosive devices and other unexploded ordnances, where a lot of the casualties have come from. But everything from sniper training to regular military training is going to be key. And then the other 50 trainers we're sending are going to specialize with medical training with our with the medics to deal with those traumatic injuries, lessons learned from Afghanistan from our standpoint, making sure they have the equipment to do it, dealing with air flight safety crew, or air, the safety of air flight crews. So I want to make sure that we are helping them on that basis. Military police training and logistics, because the Ukrainian military uses a very antiquated Soviet-style logistics for moving equipment and materials. And so this is another piece that we hope to help them modernize.
Now, if this training camp was actually built 6 years ago, then I guess that kind of speaks to my original question about as far as budgeting goes. Was the Canadian government anticipating that this might actually happen? I mean, you know, I certainly never thought I'd see something like this in my lifetime. I don't know. Did you?
No, I think all of us are taken back. You know, over the last few years in my dealings with Ukraine and watching how things evolved with Yanukovych and how he turned into such a dictator and a kleptocrat and dropped the country bare, you could see things were starting to change on the ground. And so I was already feeling after the start of the Maidan that something big would happen with Russia. I thought it would happen after the Sochi Olympics. I thought it would happen after the Paralympics as well, but Putin didn't wait that long. He actually invaded and annexed Crimea between the two competitions. But, you know, essentially, you know, Prime Minister Harper has been an outspoken critic. President Putin was not afraid to confront him head on and tell him to get out of Ukraine. And, you know, we are there providing, you know, significant contributions, both financially, not only from a military standpoint, but from humanitarian assistance for helping with their trade and financial recovery. Because, you know, how can you have people wanting to support the current government if they don't have any economic hope? And I know that in some of the lecture monitoring I did and some of my visits, which included going to intentionally went to Kharkiv and Odessa, so I could be in, you know, ethnically Russian speaking areas of Ukraine. And, you know, they're essentially, Putin's aggression has turned all of them into patriots, into Ukrainian nationalists, in my opinion. And and I also see that they want the same things that we take for granted. They want a job. They want peace and security. They want a future for their kids and their grandkids. And so we have to be there to help the Poroshenko government and Prime Minister Yatsenyuk in addressing those incredible challenges.
Indeed. Well, we spoke last week with Minister Opitz about that, the training, and also, you know, we spoke about a little bit about funding as well, and he considered it, in his words, an outstanding investment for Canada to be giving aid to Ukraine to defend itself. And just coming back again, as far as the funding goes, was there something allocated specifically in the budget for this? Were we having to do some juggling to cover these costs, or is it all sort of contained and you're not needing to do anything, you know, extra as far as...
So we did put in the budget the extra $7 million to do the incremental costs of doing this training. This is, you know, the cost of moving people there, the supplies. It's above and beyond what we'd paid normally if they were back here in Canada. But it is a two-year commitment. That $7 million is for the first fiscal season. But we will be there for 2 years, and in significant number to ensure that we can bring battalions down, and between us and the Americans, essentially turn out every 6 weeks a brigade that's fully trained with the ability to go out there and defend themselves, defend Ukraine, and push back on the Russian rebels.
Now, there are people that are in favor of what you're doing, obviously, but there's also a segment of Canadian society that is strongly opposed to, you know, not only your government, but to the sending military aid to Ukraine or anywhere abroad. I don't know if it's because there are fears that the aggression will only continue to escalate. Mr. Putin has already threatened the West with nuclear weapons. Whether that's an empty threat or not remains to be seen, but it does scare people. And so there are, you know, there's a contingent of people that really are more in favor of appeasement. What do you say to those who maintain that Canada is inviting this aggression by supporting Ukraine militarily, even with non-lethal aid?
Well, President Putin is a bully. And I know that from all of my experience dealing with bullies, or anyone else for that matter, a bully only backs off when they realize that somebody's going to fight back. And so we need to be able to strengthen Ukraine, so as well as everybody else in the region. We have to really demonstrate, and by now having actual boots on the ground alongside Ukrainian soldiers, shows the Russian Federation that we are standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder, with Ukrainian military soldiers. And more importantly, you know, what we see happening is that Putin is provoked by weakness whenever he sees anyone at the international level retracting from taking a strong stand. That actually provokes him to continue on with his aggression. And, you know, Canada, under the leadership of Prime Minister Harper, has been very strong in saying that we will never recognize a single inch of Ukrainian territory being occupied by Russia. It will always be sovereign Ukrainian territory, whether it takes 5 years or 50 years.
Well, that's the thing, is the Budapest Memorandum that was signed back in 1994, when Ukraine gave up nuclear weapons in exchange for a guarantee of protection of its sovereignty. Canada was not a signatory, though, was it?
No, so the signatories that were part of the Budapest Memorandum were all nuclear powers, of course. So it was Russia, Ukraine, Britain, and France. And you would have hoped that now that the memorandum has been essentially tore up, you would have hoped that there would have been a stronger reaction from those signatories. But regardless, you know, Canada, and working with our allies, are trying to take the strongest stand possible. We have in Canada the strongest sanction regime against all the players, that both Ukrainian and Russians, who are responsible for this invasion, or who have been promoting this continued illegal occupation. But, you know, we feel so strongly that, you know, not only because, you know, Canada was built, in my opinion, as someone's proud Ukrainian heritage, you know, I always felt that, you know, Canada may have been founded by the French and the English and First Nations peoples, but, you know, in Western Canada, in particular, it was the Ukrainians and other Eastern Europeans that came that actually built the country and helped settle it. So, you know, we are all very, I think most Canadians, recognize the importance of not only Ukrainians' contributions to our country, but recognize that this is a democratic country that deserves our support, that is facing a major invasion orchestrated by Vladimir Putin himself, who has greater ambitions than just Ukraine. Ukraine is just, in my opinion, the first step, and we have to be taking a very strong stand in the face of Putin's view of a new world order without at all respecting any memorandum, any international treaty, or the UN Charter for that matter.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Minister Bezan, for sharing those insights, and thank you for your good work in Ukraine and for protecting Canadian democracy as well, as, you know, democracy around the world, in this support for a fledgling democracy on the other side of the world.
Well, I appreciate that, and, you know, we'll continue to help Ukraine with trade, with reforming their democratic institutions, with training their judges and human rights activists, and ensure that as they go through their lustration, that ultimately the people of Ukraine get the government that they deserve.
Thank you so much, Minister Bezan, who is the Parliamentary Secretary for the Minister of Defense and the Member of Parliament for Interlake Selkirk in Manitoba.
Hello, Dobrý den. My name is Serhiy Kaznady in Toronto, Canada, and I am pleased to narrate Victor's Vignettes, stories about life in Soviet and post-Soviet Ukraine. These stories were written by Viktor Sergeyev, who lives in Mykolaiv, Ukraine. Viktor worked as freelance technical translator from English, but now has multiple sclerosis, which makes speaking difficult for him. But he finds great joy and a creative outlet in writing and sharing his stories online and here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. You can find Viktor's original transcripts along with his commentary at his blog, Vignettes, Life in Ukraine. Links and audio files at nashholos.com. Kyiv has always been a wonderful place to visit, especially in the spring. I always took great pleasure in walking around Kyiv, enjoying the sights and the scent of the blossoming cherry and chestnut trees, and of course the gorgeous girls. In April of 1986, I had to travel to Kyiv to take extension courses for work. I was told I needed to brush up on my propaganda skills. 3 weeks after I arrived, a flurry of rumors began flying around. Something had happened in Chernobyl. However, there was no information in the mass media, so nobody really took it seriously. But one day I noticed something unusual, a small piece of paper at the public telephone office that sent a shiver down my spine. It said, no connection to Chernobyl and Pripyat. Obviously, then, the rumors were true. There was indeed a serious problem in Chernobyl and Pripyat. On the other hand, it was, after all, only a note about telephone service being down. Nothing particularly unusual about that. Maybe it really was just a strange coincidence. So life went on as usual. For most people living in and visiting Kyiv, it was just another wonderful spring to enjoy. Then a few days later, everything changed. The rest of the world had found out about the nuclear disaster in Chernobyl and Pripyat, so Soviet authorities could no longer pretend that nothing had happened. So finally we knew the truth. These are things I still remember. Water hoses. They were along and across every street so that workers could thoroughly wash down the pavement. Plenty of red wine. Every little shop was packed floor to ceiling with boxes of red wine. Rumor had it that red wine reduced the effects of radiation poisoning. Of course, no one really knew for sure, but better safe than sorry. Long lists of additional buses and trains leaving Kyiv. Public showers. Usually they were open Monday to Saturday from 10 in the morning until 10 at night. Now every existing public shower was operational 24/7. Official incompetence. Everyone in Kyiv scrambled to find dosimeters or radiation detectors, desperately accosting friends, retired military men, and occasional street sellers. The few that were found turned out to be old, shabby museum pieces. Those that actually did work displayed technical data that was totally meaningless to non-military personnel. Widespread panic. It was the perpetual state of everyone in Kyiv. Railway tickets back home were the most valued treasures. Lots of rumors. Everyone had an opinion, and they were sure they were right. But nobody really knew anything for sure. News from the West was blocked, and the Soviet regime was not exactly forthcoming with helpful information. Much time has passed since then. The world has mostly forgotten about Chernobyl, although its effects still linger, and will for many years to come. A half-life is a long time. The nuclear disaster at Chernobyl caused many people to lose their lives or their health, but for the survivors, life goes on. To me, Kyiv is still beautiful. The golden church domes, the blue water of the river Dnipro, the green trees, and of course, gorgeous girls everywhere. Best of all, though, the Soviet regime had its own meltdown. Just a few years after the meltdown in reactor number 4 in Chernobyl ruined my beautiful spring visit to Kyiv. These are the words of Viktor Sergeyev in Mykolaiv, Ukraine. I am Serhiy Kaznadiy in Toronto, Canada. I hope you enjoyed this edition of Viktor's Vignettes, stories from the life of Viktor Sergeyev in Mykolaiv, Ukraine. You can find Viktor's original transcripts and commentary at his blog, Vignettes, Life in Ukraine. For audio archives and links, visit www.nashholos.com. So until next time, до побачення!
Here's what's coming up this week in Vancouver's Ukrainian community. This Friday, enjoy a pierogi supper at the Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Auditorium, 154 East 10th Avenue in Vancouver, from 5 till 8 p.m. For details, call Holy Trinity Ukrainian Orthodox Parish at 604-274-8030 or visit uocvancouver.com. On Wednesdays, catch Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio broadcasting live from Nanaimo to North and Central Vancouver Island, the Gulf Islands, the Sunshine Coast, Northwest Washington State, and in the Greater Vancouver listening area. Wednesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Pacific Time on CHLY 101.7 FM on the radio dial and streaming online at chly.ca. Channel 8 Omni airs two Ukrainian language TV shows in the Vancouver viewing area. Kontakt TV Sundays at 7 a.m. with repeats Tuesdays at 9 a.m. and Thursdays at 7 a.m. and Forum TV Sundays at 8 a.m. with repeats on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. and Thursdays at 12 noon. And at 6 p.m. on Saturday evenings, flip your radio dial right back here to AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver or catch the live stream at am1320.com. And join me for another hour of fun on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. In between broadcasts, make sure to follow Nash Holos and me on Facebook and Twitter. And for audio archives, transcripts, podcast feeds, and more, visit our website at www.nashholos.com.
Цигани стояли, стояли, думала, циганочка молода, стояла, думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода.
Один циган п'яне гуляє, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода. На циганку свою поглядає, на циганку свою поглядає, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода. Ой, циганку, як я тебе горе, ой, циганку, як я тебе горе, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода. Синеє море, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода. Ой, на горі цигани стояли, ой, на горі цигани стояли, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода. Циганочка молода, циганочка молода. Ой, на горі цигани стояли, ой, на горі цигани стояли, стояла думала, циганочка молода, стояла думала, циганочка молода, циганочка молода.
For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio at 6 p.m. Saturdays here on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver. Live in Nanaimo Wednesdays at 11 a.m. till 1 p.m. on 101.7 FM and streaming at chly.ca. And also on our new international edition, which airs Fridays through Monday in over 20 countries on the PCJ Radio Network on AM, FM, and shortwave radio. In between broadcasts, you can find us online at www.nashholos.com. Among other things, you'll find the links there to the podcast, and to make sure to follow Nash Holos on Twitter, and please like our Facebook page. Ну, ми вже скінчили нашу програму, вже час додому і сказати до побачення. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Де сонечко не досягає, там і плоду немає. And our proverb of the week translates as, there is no fruitfulness where the sun cannot reach. Well, that just about wraps it up for another edition of Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio here on AM 1320 CHMB. To take us home, we have Romko and Canada's National Kolomeka. I'm Pavlina on behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and AM 1320. Thanks for listening and Dobranich! Hey, 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 hey!